are listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and this month of April we're in right now is National Stress Awareness Month. And this episode you're listening to right now will help you turn your April, or whatever month you're listening in, into a personal stress decreasing month. Oh, yeah. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. While we're on the topic of making healthy eating a whole lot less hellish, although that's what we're always on the topic of here on the Party in My Plants podcast, one of my favorite essential non-helly healthy staples, as you probably know by now, is Amazing Grass Greens Powder. And I am so excited that Amazing Grass is sponsoring this podcast episode. I truly, honestly, wholeheartedly adore Amazing Grass's amazing grasses, which I'm sure you're well aware of if you follow me on Instagram. Their green superfood powders are an insanely tasty blend of nutritious greens, phytonutrient-packed fruits, veggies, grasses, digestive enzymes, and probiotics that I can't and I don't want to live without. And it just so happens that one of the kitchen tools I'm going to outline in today's episode is the vehicle through which I enjoy Amazing Grass. Amazing. To make Amazing Grass even more amazing, they're offering Party in My Plants podcast listeners 40% off. Yes, 40%, not just some measly 10%, 40% off. That's almost half off your Amazing Grass order if you go to their website, amazinggrass.com, and use coupon code PLANTPARTY40 at checkout. That's PLANTPARTY40 at checkout on amazinggrass.com. Today's guest may be an expert in sleep, but hear me this, our chat is not a snoozer. Jennifer Hanway is a sleep expert, a pro on all things gut health, and a life coach who blends decades of personal experience with education to help busy folks get their wellness in check. She also splits her time between London, Boston, and New York, so she's her own test subject in keeping oneself energized and feeling awesome despite time zone changes and routine disruptions. This is actually the first time I've had a sleep expert on the Pimp podcast, so I did not want to snooze and lose. I grilled Jenny about naps, bedtime routines, insomnia, jet lag, my husband's personal sleep habits, and really everything I could think of related to Z's. So listen up and prepare to sleep like a little teeny adorable bitty baby tonight. Jenny, thank you so much for coming on the Party of My Plants podcast.
It's my absolute pleasure.
Oh, your accent is my absolute pleasure. You split your time in Boston and London?
Yeah, so I'm originally from London. We've lived in Boston for 6 years. My base is here, and then I kind of split my time between here, New York, and London.
Wow. Mm-hmm. It's a busy life. Lots of city vibes.
Yeah, I love it. It's challenging, but I do love it.
Well, I'm excited to hear how you're able to maintain good gut health and good sleep among all these different cities and all the travel. But first, I do want to dive in. You focus on helping peeps with two really essential components of wellness. Like I said, gut health and sleep. Are you just passionate about these two things separately? Are they connected? How have these become like your two pillars?
My two things. Yeah, I'm a real hit at dinner parties when that's all I want to talk about.
Yeah, what's like your party line? So what do you do for a living? What do you say?
Right? I'm like, let's talk about sleep and poop. I can say poop, right?
Yes. Okay. Are there places where one cannot say poop? I guess like a cocktail party.
I think we should all talk about poop, but yeah. that's another conversation. So I really think that stress and sleep and gut health, they really are kind of the pillars of well-being, because if you don't have those things, nothing else is going to work. So it doesn't matter how amazing your diet is if you're not digesting any food. It doesn't matter how amazing your workout routine is if you're not sleeping well and rebuilding at night. Mm. So I really think those two things are the real pillars of health. And that's where I start with all of my clients. They're both two things that I've struggled with in my own life. And I think a lot of us come to this kind of career in this field through struggling with health issues and finding their way through them and then wanting to help other people. And that was certainly my case.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, wow. I love how succinctly you just said that, that they are the pillars of well-being. If you're not digesting whatever, you know, it doesn't matter what you eat. And if you're not recovering, then it doesn't matter what weights you lift or how far you run. That's perfect. End of story. Bye. So tell me a little bit about your struggle with each of these two things.
Yeah. So I'm kind of the poster child for bad gut health, which is an awful thing to be. And I never really realized that until I started learning about it. I had a ton of antibiotics as a kid because I had ear infections. Mm-hmm. I was a very unhealthy vegetarian from the age of about 11 through to about 21. Ton of stress. I've done a ton of traveling. I've lived in Mexico, India, South America. Contraceptive pills, stress. You name it, I've done it. And throughout my early to late 20s, I'd always struggle with digestive issues, gas, bloating, pain, all of the above. My weight would fluctuate all of the time. My periods weren't great, but I was on the contraceptive pill, so I didn't really know what was going on. Mm-hmm. And this all came to a head when I think I was like 30 or 31, and my digestive system just kind of stopped working. It was like, enough's enough.
System overload.
Like, we're done. I won't give you the gross details, but basically it got to a point where my digestive system just stopped working and I was put on a morphine drip in hospital. Oh, and wow. This had been through, you know, and after this, I went through all of the tests for IBS, for Crohn's, ulcerative colitis, and thank goodness they all came back negative. But I was given this blanket diagnosis of IBS.
Woohoo! I'm with you. I'm with you. What the hell does IBS mean? It's BS.
Here is some really bad medication that's going to give you some worse side effects than mm-hmm. you have. And that's not to say I'm anti-conventional medicine. I definitely think it has its time and its place, but this wasn't the right thing for me. So this was, okay, conventional medicine is not going to help me. And it's very different. You know, the UK and the US healthcare system are very different, apart from really their approach on conventional medicine. So this was the time where I really started to take a deep dive into my own health. Now, because there's no such thing as coincidence, at the time I was transitioning from the fitness and dance industry to more of the nutrition profession, which is now where I spend all of my time. And I started working with a mentor, and she, as part of that mentorship, she was my practitioner. And this was something called biosignature modulation, which doesn't really exist anymore, but it's a very long story, but it's a great guy called Charles Poliquin, who sadly passed away, who used to work with Olympic athletes and really, really high level athletes. And he would read the body in a different way. So we would look at gut health and stress and sleep and hormonal health and all of those things, along with looking at nutrition. And purely as part of this, he gave me two suggestions. He was just like, why don't you try cutting out gluten and take some L-glutamine? And those two things changed my life.
Wow.
And as I started, so then I qualified as a biosignature modulation practitioner. I started to learn more and more and more over the years. I certified as a holistic nutritionist. I'm back at school now doing an advanced degree in clinical nutrition.
Damn.
And I'm a busy girl. And I've mentored under some amazing functional medicine doctors. And just the more I've learned, the better I feel. And it's just, I'm just so passionate about sharing that with other people, because you don't know how good you feel until you feel good.
Yes. I've said, yes. Yes. I say that all the time. You don't know the glow. You don't know. You don't know. I mean, so many people are just like, this is how I feel, but they don't even know that they could feel so much more energized, so much more light, so much more happy. So, oh yeah, it's fascinating.
And it's, you know, when I give people their programs and we chat through things and they're like, oh my goodness, I don't think I'm ever going to be able to do this. And I'm like, give me 3 days. And they're like, what? I'm like, give me 3 days. And they start to feel better after 3 days. And I think as soon as people start feeling better and getting results, that keeps them consistent.
Totally.
And then they'll get through to one of the end of the programs. And okay, so they might be on the program maybe 80, 20, 70, 30, but they never want to go back to feeling that way.
Yes.
And a lot of them will kind of maybe slide off the wagon slightly, and they'll have like a beer and a pizza, and they'll feel, and I hate that they have to go through this, but they'll feel so terrible after that beer and pizza they're like, do you know what? I'm either just going to go for a gluten-free, dairy-free pizza or a gluten-free pizza with goat cheese and a glass of wine instead, and I'm going to be good with that.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think my lucky stars that I have IBS, because it helps me feel so lousy when I eat shit food or overstress and not take care of myself, that it really keeps me in check. It's a real gut check.
Yeah.
I love it. I'm like very grateful about it. But yeah, I think a lot of people need to remember how bad you can feel after you've been eating well for a while and you get cocky, to, you know, help remind you, oh, this is why I take care of my health.
Right. And it doesn't even have to be a case of, you know, mine was a real extreme case, but I think everyone has some kind of dysregulated gut function, some kind of issues with stress and sleep. So it's like, you don't have to go from zero to hero. You can go from feeling good to feeling great.
Mm-hmm. One thing I wrote down as you said it, because this is fascinating. You've said, the more I learn, the better I feel. Mm-hmm. And it made me think that that is not a universal situation right now. I think a lot of people, the more they learn, the more stress they get, and then the less better they feel. Right. Talk to me about how you aren't going through that, because I have to coach down a lot of people from overwhelm. And it's like they're creating their own health issues by being so overworked and so overstressed because they're hearing this and that. How come you're not doing that?
What's my secret?
Yeah.
But I do agree. I think sometimes the stress and the anxiety of, oh my goodness, I have to do this and this and this, and I have to drink my celery juice, and I have to cycle my seeds, and I have to put my crystals outside at the full moon. And like, the stress of that stuff is way more harmful than, oh my goodness, do you know what? I had a slice of pizza. I'm going to get back on the wagon.
Yes.
So I think for me, I mean, I've always felt that knowledge is power, but with my clients, I really try and talk them into kind of what I call the big rocks, or the things that will move the needle. So let's say a client comes to me and they've got some hormonal imbalances and they've tried everything going, because we live in this wonderful society where we have so much knowledge and so much access to knowledge. It's slightly overwhelming. It's where you get that knowledge from that can be challenging. But they come to me and they're super overwhelmed and they think they have to do everything. And I really talk them through doing what I call the big rocks. And if you think that you had a mason jar, because there's one on my desk right now, and you wanted to fill that mason jar, and that mason jar was your health, rather than putting in a grain of sand at a time, so let's say something like seed cycling or succulents or essential oils, or by the way, I do all of those things, but you put those in your mason jar, they're not going to fill up your mason jar. Mm. But let's look at something like managing your stress throughout the day, getting your body moving, going for a walk, cutting out gluten, eating more veggies. You know, the things that are, we think are so simple, but those are the big, big rocks. They're the things that we focus on. And once you have those in check, then you can do all of the other stuff. But it's really, what are the things that are the big rocks? What are the things that move the needle? And that's where I try and get my clients to focus.
I love that. I love it. And I'm wondering, is sleep one of your big rocks?
And then sleep is the other big rock.
Okay. I was hoping you would say that for a perfect transition.
We planned it. So when I was about 7.5, 8 years ago, I was working in London and I was part of the team that set up the first bar studio in London. So I'm an ex-professional dancer, turned fitness person, turned nutrition person.
Wow.
And it was the best time of my life. I still love those people to death. They're still my family. But we put the work in. We hustled and then we hustled some more. So we were a small team. We were running a studio. I would do split shifts, or sometimes I'd be in the morning, sometimes I'd be in the evening. And at the time I was doing long distance with my now husband. So I would maybe finish work at 8:30, finish teaching classes at 8:30. I'd see a private client until 9:30. And my apartment in London at the time had terrible Wi-Fi. So I would then Skype with my boyfriend, now husband, for an hour, travel back to my apartment in London, and anywhere in London takes an hour to get to, even if it's like 20 minutes away. And then the next day I'd have to get up at 4:37 every morning. And I say 4:37 because if you've ever got up super early, you know, there's a big difference between 4:35 and 4:37.
That's hilarious.
I was not getting a lot of sleep, and I was, you know, I was so into everything, and I was doing all the nutrition things right, and I was training, and there was just a piece of the puzzle that wasn't slotting into place for me. And part of my training as a biosignature modulation practitioner, I was looking at it was actually looking at rest and recovery for athletes. So a lot of what I studied is in athletes and bodybuilders and things. But what I've done is taken that knowledge and brought it kind of to the general public and brought it more into the wellness world. And I really thought, well, if we do all these things for our athletes, why are we not doing them for ourselves? It's exactly the same things. So that's when I really started to look into sleep. And as part of my research into sleep, I found that it's really not what you do in the hour or two before you go to bed that makes a difference. It's really what you do from the moment that you wake up. So I was, well, we can get into that.
Please say more.
So transitioning onto the stress and sleep thing. So we all think about, you know, we all see on people's Instagrams their nighttime routine, yes, and they have their golden milk, and they have their essential oils, and they do their journaling, and they meditate, and et cetera, et cetera. That's great, but by that time, it's too late to do anything about the cortisol levels, which is your stress hormone that's built up during the day.
Huh. So yeah. Wait, let's hold on. So cortisol builds up during the day, and then by the time you're putting your legs up on a wall and writing your gratitude journal and sniffing your lavender, you're already screwed because that cortisol's already there. It's already built up. So whatevs.
That is exactly what I'm saying.
Oi. I've never heard that before.
Right. So if I just kind of, I'll backtrack and explain a little bit more about that.
Okay.
So cortisol is our stress and our energy hormone. And just like any of our hormones, it's not good or bad. It's when it's out of balance that's a problem. Mm-hmm. And especially with cortisol, we have natural cortisol spikes and drops during the day. This is regulated by our circadian rhythm. And you can think of the circadian rhythm as, think of it as the conductor of the orchestra of your body. So it will regulate everything from energy levels to mood to sex drive to hunger to when you wake up to when you go to bed, everything. So circadian rhythm regulates all of those things, but it also needs something called Zeitgebers or Zeitgebers or regulators to keep it on track, almost like winding a watch. And those things are things like light exposure, temperature, eating, social interaction, exercise, light. Now, when our circadian rhythm is off and when we're getting cortisol spikes in the day when we shouldn't do, that's what's going to lead to stress and anxiety throughout the day, and it's going to disrupt our sleep at night.
Fascinating. So you really have to, like you said, it's about what you do then during the day.
It's about because what we want to do is, in a person with a healthy cortisol curve, our cortisol should be low, and the other hormones that relate to cortisol should be low in the evening, which gets us off to sleep. Mm-hmm. But if we have been having cortisol spikes throughout the day, and these can be anything from, so cortisol is our fight or flight hormone. Mm-hmm. So it's a survival mechanism. So when we were running through the desert, I don't know, my history is not great, being chased by a saber-toothed tiger, it's the hormone that makes us run fast and makes our blood pressure go up, makes our body temperature go up, so we can fight or flight. Mm-hmm. And then it should spike, but then it should drop down pretty quickly. And it shouldn't be elevated all the time.
Yes.
And right now, we don't see the difference between a notification on our phone. Our body doesn't know the difference between a notification on our phone, tax return time, your cat trying to break into the office, from being chased by the saber-toothed tiger. So what's happening is that we're living in a state of chronically elevated cortisol, and our body always wants to be in a state of homeostasis. Mm-hmm. So high cortisol raises some of our bodily functions, but it lowers some of the others. Mm-hmm. So when we're in that fight or flight mode, our body's like, do you know what? We don't need brain function. We don't need our immune system. We don't need our reproductive system, because we need everything that we can to fight this tiger.
Got it. That was a very clear and helpful explanation. I've not heard something so clear and just like logical. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I was listening to, I think it was a Mel Robbins like audiobook the other day, and she said something, if it's actually Mel Robbins that said it, that like cortisol is like, it's cool and normal for it to like pump for like 7 seconds or something. But then mm-hmm. after that, like she said, it's a choice if we like keep pumping it. Like it's normal to like, be stressed if you see like a notification or something, but then it's a choice to remain stressed after that initial reaction.
And this is, I mean, we have more stresses than we've ever had in our lifetimes.
Yeah.
And our body, I call it paleolithic creatures in the sci-fi world. So our body doesn't know the difference between someone not liking our Instagram posts and the fact that we're about to kind of get killed by a tiger.
Oh my God. I mean, those are equally upsetting things.
So one, our cortisol is spiking throughout the day, and two, we're not doing anything to bring it down.
Yes.
So that's what I talk about when I talk about managing and metabolizing cortisol throughout the day. It's what are these little tips and tricks that we can do so when we get to the evening, our cortisol is low so we can get to sleep.
I love it. Okay, so what are some of these tips and tricks? I know that you're a big fan of, like, I don't know if fan's the right word, but you talk a lot about how starting your day is what should be prioritized.
Oh my goodness. So I'm a morning person.
Samesies.
Right? So we're probably both lion chronotypes.
I took that test. Okay. I was like doing like thousands of pages of research on you, I found that this is a thing you recommend. No one else will know what it is. Tell them what it is. I'm a bear, okay, by the way.
Oh, interesting.
Like Ellen DeGeneres, I was very happy to hear.
You're always like, which other celebrity?
I know. I was like, yes, Ellen.
Right? It's like more scientific BuzzFeed quiz. So chronotypes are, we used to think that really we had two chronotypes. And we used to think that was an early bird or a night owl. Mm-hmm. And actually now that there's a doctor called Dr. Michael Breas, or Dr. Michael Bruce, and he has identified four different chronotypes, and they're lions, bears, dolphins, and wolves. And your chronotype,
what was the last one?
Wolves. It's probably my accent.
I know. I'm like, what the hell? Is like a hog?
Like a wolf.
A wolf.
Wolf. Like Game of Thrones.
I'm so sorry. Okay, wolf. Got it.
And these chronotypes determine everything from when you're best to wake up, to when you're best to work out, to have a job interview, to have sex, to eat, to do all of these things. And the more we can fit our routine to our chronotype, the healthier we're going to be. Now, saying that, I was speaking to someone who came to one of my events the other day, and apparently there's actually, we have these four chronotypes and they fit nicely into these little boxes, but we can have a 10-hour difference to the circadian rhythm of someone else. So it doesn't matter where you are, we're in the same time zone, but your circadian rhythm might be better suited to living in Japan than it is in New York. Isn't that nuts?
Yeah, that's confusing because I can't move to Japan.
Regardless of moving to Japan, what you can do is you can find your chronotype, and you find it at thepowerofwhenquiz.com.
The Power of When Quiz. We'll link that in the show notes.
And as much as you can, if you can set your routine to your chronotype, it's going to make you feel better. It's going to give you health benefits. It's going to make you feel more energized. You're going to get better sleep. Now, I always kind of preface this and say this in my workshops, that don't go and take your test and find out that you're a dolphin and then come to work on Monday at 11 o'clock when you're supposed to be at work at 9 o'clock and say to your boss, well, I'm a dolphin chronotype, so I can't come into work. But it does give you an idea. And if you have any control over your schedule, you can really fit your schedule to your chronotype.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I'm a lion. I'm usually wide awake by 5:30 a.m. at the absolute latest. And I mean like wide awake, I'm ready to go. Let's do it.
Oh yeah. Okay. That's why. Okay. I'm a medium morning person. I'm like, I wake up at like 6:30, but like, I'm not really like, I'm happy, but I'm not like ready to like go for a run till like 8.
Oh no, I'm literally, it's like that scene in, I think it's Sleeping Beauty or Cinderella, whichever one it is, where like my feet touch the ground and it's like squirrels run around my feet and then birds fly around my head. But having said that, anything past 8:30 in the evening, I'm useless and terrible company.
Terrible company. That's funny. So we're born this way. Like, you're, that's what you're saying. Everyone's born. Because, I mean, there is that, like, guilt out there because we do live in a morning-driven society. And my husband, I don't know what his thing is. I have to do the test. But whatever the thing is that sleeps as long as possible and then stays up till 2 in the morning is what he would be.
Like, and there's nothing – exactly. We celebrate morning people and we vilify people with the best things. There's nothing, you're, you know, it's, there's no different. It's whenever you are the most productive, and that is genetic.
Poor guy. I'm always giving him shit. I mean, we're both self-employed. So I wake up at 6:30, buzz around, do my thing. He's like in bed at 9:30, crawling out at like 9:45. And I'm like, you are a failure to society. What are you doing? And then the other night, literally I go to bed like now at like 9:30, 10. And I like got up to pee at like 2 o'clock. I'm not even joking. I come out of the bedroom. He's still awake on his computer at 2 in the morning. I'm like, what are you doing? But like, that's his thing.
That's his thing. And that's what suits him
best. That's okay. He should listen to this. So everybody else listening, they should take their test. And then once they get it, their results, it's in the show notes, they can sort of try to at least A, have empathy and more understanding with for themselves, and B, then try as they can to rearrange their daily activities based on when they're the most productive.
You know, as much as possible, but there are still things, regardless of your chronotype, there's still things that we should be doing during the day to balance our circadian rhythm and to manage our cortisol.
Okay, so what are some of those things?
Okay.
Tell us.
So let's start from kind of when we wake up. So we want to wake up without an alarm clock. Now, we may need something to wake us up, but we certainly don't want to use an alarm clock. The clue is in the title. It says alarm. So when we wake up, our body's rhythms kind of naturally start. So our temperature goes up, our blood pressure goes up, our cognitive function goes up, we get warmer and our cortisol raises, and that's what wakes us up. Now, if we need help with that, ideally we want a light to help us. So we don't want an alarm clock screeching going off. We certainly don't want to be using our phones. And we'll talk about phones in the bedroom kind of at the end of the day. We want to wake up with light exposure. So one of the best things that you can do is get a daylight alarm clock. And what these do is, let's say I wanted to wake up at 6:30 a.m. Mm-hmm. I'd set my alarm for 6:30, and at 6 o'clock the light would start to come on, and it would gently and naturally wake me up the way our bodies are supposed to be woken up.
Huh. Do you think that some people are such deep sleepers they won't wake up just to a silent light?
So I used to think this, and I actually tried it. So when I was doing my crazy schedules in London, I tried this, and I was like, never going to work. I'm going to set my, so I set myself a backup alarm for the first 3 days. And then I think I had like one random day off where it's just like, oh, I'm just going to see if this works. And it worked perfectly. And it's the nicest feeling of like, oh, I'm awake, rather than like, oh shit, I'm awake. What day is it?
Yeah. Wow. Okay, cool. So it's called a daylight.
So a daylight alarm clock, you can get them from Amazon for about $50. They're amazing. And then after that, again, it's that light exposure. So the last thing you want to do, if you do find yourself that you're kind of tired in the mornings, the last thing you want to do is like crawl out of the bedroom, keep the curtains closed, keep one eye closed. You want to expose yourself to as much light as possible.
Why?
So light is one of the main regulators of our circadian rhythm.
Hmm. Can you just explain a circadian rhythm?
So circadian rhythm is, it's everything that regulates what our body does. So it tells us when, it regulates our endocrine system, it regulates our metabolism, it regulates when we're hungry, when we have energy. So it regulates everything. And it's not just we have one circadian rhythm in our body, and it's not just that we have one circadian rhythm per organ or organ system. We actually, every cell in our body has its own circadian rhythm. And I'll tell you how we know this, and it's kind of gross. So working circadian rhythms is just getting, circadian rhythms are the new celery juice. So we'll know about these. We'll be talking about these a little bit more in like 5 years time, but you heard it here first. So there was a scientist who was doing circadian rhythm research on, I think it was fruit flies. And he injected these fruit flies or some kind of insect with a like ultraviolet light. And then he dissected these fruit flies, and then he went away on vacation. This is so gross. And then he came back and he saw that the parts of these flies were still glowing at different times of the day. Huh. And so we found out that there's not one circadian rhythm that governs our whole body. It's every organ system and every cell in the body has its own circadian rhythm.
That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. I don't even really know how to process that.
So just for kind of in a practical way to think about that is if we think about what our bodies do at night, like how much, everything we do at night, we rest, we repair, we detoxify. Each organ system does that at a different time of night.
Hmm.
So that's why we need to be asleep at certain times. Yeah, that's why we need to be asleep at certain times of the night for our bodies to go through those systems. So they can't all do everything at once.
Okay, I have a very strange question. I'm going to ask it, whatever. Okay. This is my time. I'm being selfish. Okay, if I get too little sleep, and I don't need a lot of sleep. Like I thrive with like 7 hours. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a lot or a little. 6-7 hours, I'm fine. But yeah. if going to the airport and I have to, you know, wake up super early, and I, even though I went to bed early, like it's just all funky. It's not normal. The only thing that'll get upset is my stomach.
Yeah.
I'll feel like, so does my digestion processing thing happen at the end and I'm like cutting it off before it gets done?
Yeah. So your liver has a certain time. Your digestive system has a certain time. So very, very likely that you're upsetting them in the middle of their kind of rest, reset, repair, detoxification time.
Right. It's a very specific feeling that I only get if I undersleep.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
There you go.
And so do you have that too? Like for some, does everyone have, could everyone really, if they thought about how their body feels when they undersleep, like, you know, maybe it's my husband's mental clarity or something. Does everyone kind of have that?
Yeah, everyone does. And it's often when my clients come to work with me and they work with me one-to-one, they'll often say, oh, I wake up, you know, I wake up the same time every night to use the restroom. And I say to them, well, actually, it's not to use the restroom, because as human beings, if we couldn't sleep 7 hours without using the restroom, we'd be really badly designed. So you're probably waking up at a certain time because one of your organ systems is going through its like rest, repair, detoxification time, and it's struggling. And that's what's waking you up. And we all know that when we wake up in the middle of the night, we have to pee, otherwise we won't get back to sleep.
Huh. Oh my goodness. This is so fun. Cool. Okay. Tell me more. Okay. So we need to see light in the morning.
We need to see light in the morning. We need to, now this is kind of going a little bit off track, but I'm a huge fan of morning routines and morning rituals. So I will get up and I'll have a coffee. So I'll have an organic low acid coffee, and then I will read something inspirational or informative or self-help or business or anything for half an hour first thing in the morning. That's how I start my day. My phone is not in my room, so I do not check my phone. So I do that. I have my coffee in bed with my Kindle, and it's like my favorite time in the world ever. My husband's fast asleep next to me. And then I'll get up and I come down and I do goals and gratitude. So I write 5 things that I'm grateful for and 5 of my goals. And then I'll go about starting my day, but I will not touch phones, emails, Instagram, anything until I've done those 2 things. And if I don't do them, I feel super scattered.
And do you suggest that everybody come up with their own few things? I mean, it doesn't have to be the exact same as yours.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be the exact same things. I think you read, you know, I've read so much stuff like Hal Elrod's Miracle Morning, and I know Rachel Hollis has practice.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's really just finding what works for you. I used to do the goals without the gratitude, and I found that that was so challenging because all I was doing was looking at what I wanted to achieve, and I was coming at it from a place of lack rather than abundance. So that's where I'm like, no, I'm going to write 5 things that I'm really grateful for to put me in the right mindset to look at my goals.
Right, because you would just write down your goals and then like maybe beat yourself up that you haven't achieved them yet.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that takes me about 10 minutes. Gratitude is usually, I'm grateful for cats, coffee, and my Kindle.
Do they have to rhyme? Do they have to be kiss sounds?
Cats, kiss, Kindle. And sometimes my husband makes the list, and there's usually like one other thing.
sometimes he makes the list.
Sometimes he makes the list. And that's when then I'll prep our ingredients for a smoothie. I'm very extra in the morning, so I prep our ingredients for our morning smoothie because I don't like cold food. So I'll get the ingredients out of the fridge, let those come up to warm room temperature, and then I'll go about starting my day. So I'll check my emails, I'll look at my to-do list. I reinstall Instagram on my phone because I take Instagram off my phone every night at 6:30, and then reinstall it back in the morning.
I've heard that as a thing, but then now there's that feature where you can set a time limit. That's what I've been doing. I set an hour time limit, which is amazing because then I really have to pace myself throughout the day. Have you not done that? You find that you really need to delete it off your phone?
I'm such a black and white person that I just need to delete it right now. But yeah, I think it's fascinating that our devices are set up for us to use them, but now they're also monitoring our usage to warn us.
Yeah.
I actually think they're monitoring our usage for their own purposes.
Research, yeah.
That's another conversation.
Right.
So then I don't touch Instagram until 6:30 in the morning, which seems early, but I've been up for an hour and a half. And then I'll have some breakfast, and then I usually work out about 9 o'clock in the morning. And then go about my day. But yeah, so I'll have breakfast, I'll work out. I always have my hot shower and then my cold shower. So temperature is another big regulator of circadian rhythm.
Yeah, talk to me about that. You do a dual temperature shower, right? You go hot to extreme cold. Tell me everything.
Yeah, so I'm not masochistic that I have just a cold shower because washing your hair in cold water just sucks. That's horrible.
And then you're cold for the rest of the day. It seeps into your soul.
It absolutely does.
Thank you.
I've done so much traveling where hiking and things where I've had to have cold showers. I would never put myself through that again. But I'll take a hot shower, and then at the end of the hot shower, I'll do as long as I can stand, as cold as I can stand. And we have a window that opens out in our shower room. So I'll open that even if there's 6 foot snow on the ground. And that's really, really energizing for your body.
So that's why one would do a cold. Well, you call it a contrast shower, right? You start with hot and then go cold.
Some people like to go from hot to cold to hot to cold. I just do my hot shower, do everything, wash my hair, and then cut as for cold as I can for at least a minute afterwards.
And why?
And it's another regulator of circadian rhythm. So that cold temperature helps give us more energy for the day.
Is that proven?
I think so.
I've heard a lot about that. It just sounds so painful.
It's so painful, but there's a ton of studies that I can show you that temperature is a proven regulator of circadian rhythm.
Yeah. And I mean, there's all those healing places where you go in the different pools. Yeah. I kind of want to try it. I like challenges. I kind of want to give that a shot.
It's honestly, it's never as bad as you think it is. And you can just do it for a couple of seconds. And I almost do it as one of these things. It's if I can do this, I can do anything. I mean, come on.
I love that.
It's a mental strengthening process.
That's so funny. And then later in the day when you're dealt with a really big struggle, you're I survived a cold shower. I can do this.
Oh my goodness. First world problem.
That's so funny. Excuse me for a sec. I just want to pop in here with a quick little thing I've been doing as of late that makes being healthy way less sucky, which you know is the entire point of the Party of My Plants podcast. So yay. I've been buying my non-perishable groceries. So everything but my fresh plants on Thrive Market, and I completely feel like I'm beating the healthy eating system, which makes me feel really happy but also slightly sad for all the folks in the long lines at the Whole Foods across the street from me. Although grocery shopping is a good time to listen to podcasts like this one, so I hope they're at least doing that. Anyway, if you don't know about Thrive Market or you've seen ads for it and haven't really investigated what their dealio is like me until I started using them, because while I've been working on my cookbook, I've started to loathe grocery shopping and needed a better way, let me SparkNotes Thrive for you. They're Amazon Prime meets Whole Foods. On Thrive, you can literally shop for thousands of the best-selling organic foods and natural products just like you'd find at Whole Foods or in the healthy aisle at Stop and Shop or Kroger's or wherever, but at 25 to 50% below traditional retail prices. All of Thrive's packaging is made from recycled paper and is recyclable, which is fetch. They're 100% carbon neutral, which takes away all the G to the ilt about ordering from them, right? Right. And they get from checkout on my app while I'm watching a friend's rerun to hey yo at my doorstep in 2 days. Also, you know how Phoebe says to Joey that there's no selfless good deed? Well, she is right, because by hooking yourself up with Thrive, you're also helping to make it possible for low-income families, teachers, and veterans to access health-supportive foods thanks to Thrive's Gives initiative, which means that when you sign up for Thrive, yeah, they're a membership thing just like Amazon Prime, they donate a free membership to match yours. So yeah, Phoebe, using Thrive really does make you feel better about yourself. And it also takes the hell out of being healthy, because you can get everything you need: non-GMO food, crap-free snacks, plant party kitchen staples, daily vites and sups, eco and human-friendly cleaning supplies, safe and non-toxic beauty and bath products, home goods, organic baby products, pet products, and mas more. If you're new to Thrive Market and want to give them a try, you can get an extra 25% off your first purchase and a free 30-day trial just because you listen to the Party in My Plants podcast. How sweet of a party favor is that? Could my voice get any higher? 25% off their already super low prices just by using my link, thrivemarket.com/party, and you don't even need a code. Oh, and when you go to thrivemarket.com/party, you'll see a compilation, like I'm Beethoven over here, of like 27 of my favorite things to buy on Thrive. I have my non-toxic but non-lousy mascara and highlighter on there, my go-to staples like oats, pasta, salt, coconut oil, maple syrup, quinoa, dates, and my favorite superfoods for super less money than any other place I've ever found them. Oh, and my favorite chocolate and dish soap. Equally important stuff. To check out the Party in My Plants curated list of goods, plus to get that great 20% discount off your first order and a free 30-day trial, just go to thrivemarket.com/party, and let's get back to this awesome party we're in the middle of. Another thing that you've mentioned, and you touched upon this, that you do cardio in the morning, but your general rule is to do cardio in the morning and strength in the evening. Is that for everybody? What if somebody, you know, prefers an evening run? I've seen people, sometimes I'll go out to dinner, come back from dinner, it's like 9 p.m., I'm walking home, and there's people out jogging. I'm like, I don't understand this. I even say to my husband, I'm like, I'm very confused. So they're on their run at 9. Are they going to come home and then have food and go, how are they going to bed? And then I'm like, maybe they're nurses. Maybe they're doctors. I don't know. But like, it is weird.
Like, I'm very confused.
I want to ask them, because I always wonder, like, who are these people running at 9 p.m. in the dark?
And then what do you do? And then you've got to, like, as you say, you eat and you shower and you wind down. So, I mean, number one is that we all should be working out. We all should be, and I always say,
yes.
We want to think of exercise and movement as two different things, and we need to be doing both of them. Exercise is our scheduled time where we're running, we're spinning, we're boxing, we're lifting weights, and we should be scheduling that time. Moving our body is just what we should be doing as human beings.
So what if your exercise is your movement?
No, they should be two separate things.
But do you schedule movement?
So we should just be thinking of movement is natural to us as humans to move our body. It's not natural for us to be sitting 8, 9, 10 hours a day. It's not natural for us to be as sedentary as we are.
Mm-hmm. It's so true.
Unfortunately, movement is something that we have to schedule.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to schedule that on top of our working out.
You know, I'm with you. I do that, actually. I work out every day, either run or lift. And I also schedule a walk with my dog every day.
Yeah, you have.
I have to, or I don't do it.
Yeah, you have to. And I went from being based in like fitness studios for years where I was just on my feet. I didn't sit down. If I was working, I was standing up. And then I went to being based from a home office, and I remember looking at my Apple Watch one day and I was like, I've done 3,000 steps. I was like, this is like really bad. So I think if you do have any kind of sedentary job, you do have to really, really schedule movement on top of your working out.
What are forms of movement? So separate from working out, like besides me walking my dog, like what else counts as movement?
I think it's I mean, it's really, we use this 10,000 steps as kind of an arbitrary measurement, but it's really anything where we're moving our body. So it's like, I live in a house and we have 3 flights of stairs. Mm-hmm. So rather than taking everything up in one go, I'll take things up one at a time. Or I'll make myself walk to take my Rent the Runway rather than asking my husband to drop it off. Or I'll, you know,
just I see what you're saying.
Like, we really have to think, and we have such sedentary lifestyles. We really have to think about moving our bodies. And if we don't move our bodies, again, movement is another regulator of circadian rhythm.
I got that. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
A, we're not going to be tired. And B, our body's not going to understand it's time to go to bed if we haven't been moving our body all day.
Wait, why do you say we won't be tired? That's interesting.
So if we think we have a certain amount of energy during the day, and you probably found those days where if you've been stuck at home, or when we have these wonderful East Coast winters where we just can't get out of the house, mm-hmm. you go through the day in this weird kind of limbo, like haze, and you're like, you're kind of tired, but you're not tired. And then you go to bed and you're like, you can't sleep because you haven't done anything and you haven't worn yourself out. Your body's like, I haven't done anything. I don't need to sleep.
Got it. I don't need to recover from anything.
You don't need to recover from anything. You haven't done anything. So yeah, so number one, we should be working out and we should be moving our body. That's kind of number one. Now, if you can, it's ideal to do your cardio in the morning because that raises your cortisol more than kind of strength training.
Okay.
We want to do our cardio in the morning, so we give our cortisol time to lower before we go to bed.
Mm-hmm. I find that I really can't do cardio later in the day. I don't know. I wake up, I guess, and I'm like, ah, life. And then I'm like, okay, run it off, girl. And then I go run it off. And now I'm like, okay, great. But right. Like, I don't have that, got to run later in the day.
I know, and I'm exactly the same, even if I'm doing like my most favorite form of training. Anything after about 11 o'clock is a real challenge for me.
Yeah.
So cardio in the morning, as I say, okay. This is never a case of, well, I can't do my cardio in the morning, my lifting in the afternoon, so I'm not going to work out. But that's the last thing that I want you to take from this. Mm-hmm. But if you can do your cardio in the morning, it gives your body time to metabolize that cortisol and calm down, and you're going to feel more energized during the day. Mm-hmm. And then strength training, we say strength training in the afternoon or the evening, because that's actually when your body is primed to make more strength gains with a Z. And we also have better proprioceptive function. So that basically means that we're more aware of our body in space and we're less likely to have accidents.
Oh, later in the day.
Later in the day. So I just think the worst case, and I know people love it, but the worst thing for me is that 8:30 p.m. soul cycle class where you're getting like an hour of cardio and the flashing lights and loud music and social interaction. And I'm like, how do these people go to sleep after their 8:30 p.m.?
That's like my 9 o'clock runners. What are you doing? Okay, something that I've never heard of before, but you talk about, is that time-restricted eating can impact sleep.
Yes.
Do tell.
So again, time-restricted eating it falls on that same bracket of intermittent fasting, but we kind of look at it from a different point of view. So as we said, when we're asleep, all of our systems have different functions. And what we want to make sure that we're doing is that we're not digesting, our digestive system isn't full of food whilst we're asleep. Mm-hmm. So we want to think of it as, we want our body to do separate things at separate times. So we all know that multitasking is a myth. So let's say that we're trying to drive and speak to someone and put our makeup on and drink our green juice and check our Instagram, all of the same things. It's a disaster waiting to happen. So if we are eating late into the night and our body's trying to digest, whilst it's trying to do all its rest and repair processes and trying to sleep and detoxify, that's when we run into issues. So with time-restricted eating, what we're really doing is thinking, okay, I'm going to eat within the easiest one to do is 12-hour window. And what that's going to mean is that it's going to mean my digestive system is reasonably clear for my body to be able to do all of its wonderful processes at night. And it also gives us some of the benefits of intermittent fasting without the horrible parts of intermittent fasting.
So what does that look like? Is that what you practice? So what are your like eating hours?
I think a lot of us do this naturally, especially if you do tend to be a morning person. So the easiest one to do, and it's really doable, is a 12-hour window. So let's say you finish eating your evening meal at 7 o'clock. you have your breakfast at 7 o'clock the next day.
Got it. That's really easy.
Yeah, that's really not too challenging. And we shouldn't be eating too late into the night because obviously we want to be able to give our bodies time to digest. Mm-hmm. So that 12-hour window is kind of the easiest and most successful one. And you know what? Sometimes at the weekends, you might not do it if you're eating out late. But quite often we'll shift it back at the weekends and we'll go out to dinner on a Saturday night and then we might not eat until later at brunch on a Sunday.
Right. Speaking of weekends, you suggest sleeping, like basically having the same sleep schedule 7 days a week versus the whole, let me wake up, you know, super early Monday through Friday and then sleep till 12 o'clock on the weekends as my husband does. Why is that? That's not what everybody else does.
It's really when we're talking about quality sleep, consistency is key. Mm-hmm. So we really want to be waking up at the same time and going to bed at the same time 7 nights a week. That's how we get into that really great sleep schedule. Now, we have a little bit of wiggle room, maybe 45 minutes to an hour at the absolute most. But we really want to be able to train our bodies to go to bed at the same time and to wake up at the same time, ideally in line with your chronotype, but kind of as close to it as possible. Mm-hmm. So if you're getting 5 hours of sleep Monday through Friday and then 11 hours at the weekend, again, as we said, our bodies rest and repair and detoxify at certain times of the night. So if you're missing those, it's not going to make up for that at 10 a.m. on a Sunday morning.
Right. So can you never catch up on sleep? You know, everyone's like, oh, just got to catch up on sleep. Is that a thing?
I mean, you can. And if you are tired and if you've had a stressful week, then yes, it's a good idea to get an hour or two extra at the weekends. But that should be the rarity and not the norm. Mm-hmm. So the norm should be 7 days a week. You're consistent with your wake up and your go to bed time. So if you've been sick, if you've been under stress, if you've been traveling, then yes, it's fine to catch up. But we certainly shouldn't be under the mentality of Monday through Friday, I get 5 hours of sleep. And then Saturday, I get 11 hours of sleep.
Right. What about naps? Are they good for you, bad for you? I feel like based on this convo, you would say they're not ideal because they're going to screw up your circadian rhythm.
Check you out.
Look at that. Advanced.
So naps are good when they're used properly. So we actually want a nap to add to the night of sleep that we've just had rather than take away from the upcoming night.
I don't know what that means.
Okay, so let me put that. Let's say I'm going to an event tonight and I know that I'm going to be in bed later than I usually am. So if I was to nap tomorrow, I'd actually want a nap in the morning rather than the afternoon to add to the previous night's sleep.
Oh, weird. So like if you're going to, okay, so what's today? Today's Thursday. So you're going out tonight to a cool party where you're wearing something from Rent the Runway because you referenced it earlier. And you're out.
What? Well, actually going to a yoga class and a discussion about gut health, but that's going out for me.
Okay, I was thinking like a cool gala, but whatever. Your version is great.
Yeah, wearing my Rent the Runway.
Got it. And you're going to be out till like 11:30.
Oh my goodness me. That's like 4 a.m. for me. But yes.
So you know that you have to, so you're going to wake up at your whatever time, 5, 4:30, whatever you do. Yeah. And then plan for what, like a 10 a.m. nap?
Exactly. Yeah. Like a 10, 11 o'clock. So it adds to the night before. It doesn't take away from my Friday night sleep.
So you won't nap at like 5 p.m. later in the day. Because that'll now take away from the Friday night sleep.
Exactly.
Oh my God. This is groundbreaking. I'm just thinking about it. Wow, that's very interesting. I don't nap. I hate napping. Again, it upsets my stomach. I wake up and my body's like, what the hell did you just do? I'm like, I'm very sorry. So I don't nap, but my husband is an avid napper. So I've always wondered if this is legit. Because also he sleeps so much. He's just weird with sleep. He really needs help. No, a lot of people are weird with sleep. Speaking of, what about people that can't fall asleep? You know, we talked about how the morning's so important, but there has to be some stuff that one can do at night to enhance their chances and ability to sleep, right?
Yeah. So if you are, a lot of my clients, they'll find that they're kind of sleepy around 9, 10 o'clock and then they'll go to bed. And then like the moment their head hits the pillow, they start to like stress out or they'll think or they'll have great ideas or whatever. They kind of wake up again. And again, that's our cortisol spiking. So what's happening is that where we have this dysregulated cortisol, where we might be having stress issues, gut health issues, the whole thing, our cortisol spiking at a time where it should be lower. So what we really need to do is, again, go back to that daily routine and be thinking, what can I do during the day to manage that cortisol? But there is a ton of things that we can be doing in the evening to help that process as well.
Like those blue light glasses or whatever.
Yeah. So we really want to do in the evening, we want to do the opposite of what we do in the morning. So when the sun starts to set, blue light blocking glasses are great. You can also download, there's an app called Flux, which you put on your laptops. All of our smartphones these days have nighttime settings. So you can set your phone. So you'll see it. Your screen goes from this blue color, which is the most stimulating, to like a warm orange color. You can wear blue blocking glasses in the house. They actually, years ago, you could only get awful orange ones. Now there's some really stylish ones out there.
Yeah, there's like real, my friend has a pair from Lou and Gray is the company. And Katie Horwich, hey Katie, she wears them out in public because they're so cute and stylish.
I for years we did the awful like orange ones. I look like a 70s porn star. My husband looked like something out of the Matrix. Like they were really bad. And now like you can get some really, like I've got some really, really cute ones. You can dim all the lights in your house so you don't come home and put all the big lights on. You put your side lights on, candles, that kind of thing. Really limiting screen time. And I know this is so challenging for people and it's challenging for me, which is why I have to go to the step of taking Instagram off my phone at 6:30 every night.
Yeah.
You know, I really have to make that work. And we have no, all screens go off by 7:30 at the latest. I'm really trying to stick to that. We have no phones, no TVs in the bedroom. Lavender oil is fantastic. There's not a lot of clinical research into essential oils, but lavender is one that has been clinically studied, and it does lower cortisol levels. One of my new favorite things is I have an acupressure mat and pillow from a company called Ajna Wellbeing. They're based in Australia, and that has changed my life.
Wow. Well, you'll have to send me the link. I'll put in the show notes also. Very juicy show notes this time.
Right? Shopping show notes are always a good one as well.
What about like eye masks and like blackout shades? Anything in that realm?
So yeah, absolutely. So what happens? So I always wear what I call my face bra. And it literally looks like, so these little cute eye masks, these satin ones, they don't work. You want to block out as much light as you can. So I use a Bucky eye mask. And again, I can give you the link to that one. And it literally, it's great because A, it blocks out all of the light. B, I can still wear my lash extensions and it doesn't ruin those because that's very important.
You got it. You know, prioritizes priorities. Is there any like supplements or any, you know, rituals you have in the food / supplement category?
Yeah, so you want to, you know, I'm plant-based, not vegan. So I base all of my meals around my plants. I have my proteins where it's appropriate. Carbohydrates when I'm insulin sensitive, or for my clients when they're insulin sensitive. And really there are some certain things that we can eat in the evening, which are great. So things like if we're looking at plant-based foods to eat in the evening, chickpeas are a great thing to eat in the evening. They're a great source of something called L-tryptophan, which is one of the precursors to melatonin, which is one of our sleep hormones. Dark chocolate is great. It's a great source of magnesium, which is very calming. Almonds, which are great, which are a very great source of calcium and magnesium, which is also very calming. So a handful of dark chocolate covered almonds in the evening is great. Herbal teas, so valerian tea, chamomile tea. Those can be fantastic. We actually want to avoid alcohol because that's actually going to disrupt sleep rather than help sleep.
That's interesting because a lot of people don't think that.
Yeah. So it's really, it's going to kind of knock you out rather into a deep restful sleep.
Right.
And it's one of the reasons why we feel so terrible after drinking is that it doesn't get us into that deep restful sleep. And as we've said, our bodies have so much to do while we're asleep. If they're trying to metabolize and detoxify alcohol as well, it's another reason why you feel terrible the next morning.
Interesting. That makes so much sense. Groundbreaking. Okay, what's more important, sleep quality or quantity?
Sleep quality. So sleep quality. So most people fall between a window of 6 to 9 hours.
Do people really need 9 hours?
Some people do. Some people need 9 hours. We see longevity benefits with 6 hours, and we see real health issues start to happen even with just one night of 5 hours. Ooh. That's when we start to see real health issues.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. So people who are like, I got it, 5 hours, no problem. No, you don't.
No, you don't.
No, right, you don't.
Now, but later down the line, you're going to start to see some health issues.
Okay, that's very helpful. So 6 to 9 hours. And how do you find kind of like your sweet spot? Is there like a sign that you should pay attention to? Like, you know, should you try 6 hours for a week and then try 7 and see if you felt different? Like, is that stupid or is that a thing?
No, that's absolutely a thing. And I think, you know, in an ideal world, we would be able to wake up without an alarm clock. So in an ideal world, doing this without an alarm clock, that's not going to happen for most people. So yeah, so really feeling kind of really finding how you feel best. So you could start with 6 hours and then go up to 7 hours. It's usually about moving your bedtime a little bit earlier. So what that means is that you just have to think about everything during the day. But most people I find are usually that 6 to 8 hour window is where they feel the best. And also in the summer, we tend to feel better with less sleep. And in the winter, we need a little bit more.
That makes sense. We're hibernating.
Exactly.
Sort of, and there's no light that you have to like wake up to.
Exactly.
There you go. So you, as you said, you live and work in Boston and London and New York. That is some wonky time zone stuff. So yeah. How do you deal with jet lag in different time zones and travel and sleeping on airplanes? I mean, damn, like you're not making life easy for yourself, Miss Sleep Queen.
All right. So the first year that I moved to Boston with my husband, I think I probably went back to the UK. I think it was like 8 times or something in the first year, which is a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had this great idea that I could keep my business going in London and live in Boston.
Oh yeah, no problem.
Right? Easy. And it just wasn't worth it for my health. It really wasn't worth it. So now I'm probably in London maybe 4 times a year, and I go back for about 2 weeks every time. I avoid red eyes like the plague, so I never fly overnight if I can help it.
That's tricky going to Europe. I feel like all of them are red. Like we're going to Italy in a few weeks and it's all red eye. That was the only option.
Yeah. So you can find, so some airlines, like most airlines will do one flight a day, usually from New York or Boston. And I will always do the day flight. And people say, well, do you not lose a day? I'm like, no, because I get on the plane in the morning in Boston and then I can work on the flight and I get off the plane in London and I have something to eat, shower and go to bed. And then I'm on the time zone. I don't get jet lagged because I haven't lost that night of sleep on a plane.
Okay. So fine. Good for you. Happy for you. What about me, who's going on a red eye very soon? Any tips?
Yeah. So what you can do is you do want to try and get, you know, sometimes we have to get the red eye. Like if I go from here to LA, you have to get the red eye or vice versa. So you do really, really want to try and sleep on the plane. So this is when you do your eye mask, your face bra, your earplugs, all of the things. I'm a big fan of using melatonin when and if you need it. So melatonin is a supplement that we can get, but it's the sleep hormone. It's a naturally occurring hormone that puts us to sleep. Now, for most people, 5 milligrams is a lot. So I kind of say maybe 2 to 3 milligrams of melatonin, and that will help you help manage your circadian rhythm. So you might take it on the plane before you go and then, or before you go to sleep. And then when you arrive and let's say you get to 11 o'clock at night and you're not tired, that's when you take your melatonin to start your body realizing to help it get back on the time zone.
Doesn't melatonin not affect everybody? Like, isn't there something like only if you're deficient or like only if you're old or like doesn't it not work on everybody?
I've found that most people, I think what most people are, they're too dependent on melatonin. So they'll take it all of the time as a sleep aid rather than a circadian rhythm regulating aid.
So I would
look at it like that, rather than something that you take all of the time. And again, the same thing. So the minute that you get, you know, all of those, that old advice of like, you want to get onto the time zone as soon as possible, reset your watch, you want to get out in daylight, you want to get earthed. So you want to put your feet on the ground, like it can be, you know, on the beach or on grass or whatever it is. And then you just get yourself into that time zone as quick as possible. Get out in the daylight, have some breakfast, work out. Working out is one of the best things that we can do to beat jet lag. And it sucks when you're doing it, but you're going to feel so much better.
Would you say cardio over strength?
I would actually say strength training. I mean, okay. You actually kind of don't want to go too intense. But anything where you're just going to work up a little bit of a sweat, like 30 to 45 minutes, but that's one of the best things that we can do to beat jet lag. If I do a night flight to London, I'll always work out that day, even if it's awful, because it really helps kind of get me back on track.
Love it. Oh my God. This was so jam-packed with tips. I could keep going. This is so fun. I know that gut health is your other favorite passion. Favorite passion? I don't know. Overall, to try to just have one little bow on sleep and gut health, would you say that better sleep makes for a better gut?
Yes.
I mean, I'm not feeding you a thought, but
absolutely, because we rest, repair, and detoxify when we're asleep. Mm-hmm. And if we're, you know, our digestive system and our livers are the main site of that. So if we're not helping our body to digest the food, to use it for rest and repair and to detoxify, then our gut health is going to be hugely off. So yeah, I find that even if I have like one or two nights of disrupted sleep, my gut health is off the next day. It's one of the reasons why our gut health goes off when we travel. Mm-hmm. So and repair and detoxification that our gut has to do, if we're not sleeping, it's not going to have the time to do that.
I mean, it's all a freaking intertwined system, right? Like more stress can also affect our gut, but stress can affect our sleep. Then bad sleep can affect our gut. Our gut, if our gut sucks, at least for me, I then get stressed and then it's a whole mess.
And I think the way to look at that is that can feel a little bit overwhelming.
Yeah, I'm stressed thinking about it. I'm like, calm down, girl.
But if you flip that and if you think that, oh, if I make changes in one area, it's going to benefit everything else. I think that's the way to not get overwhelmed with it.
Oh, yes. Thank you for saying that. That's beautiful. Oh, my God. Yes. Amazing. Okay. Perfect. Now, let me ask you my planty questions before I let you go. Changing the page a little bit here. What is your favorite plant party restaurant?
Okay, so Boston is getting better at plant-based and healthier options. We have it's a small business here. It's called Mother Juice. It's female-founded, and their salads are incredible.
Mother what? Juice?
Mother Juice in Boston.
Nice. I don't go to Boston enough, but it's so cute. I should come. What is your favorite plant to eat?
I saw this question and I was like, oh my goodness, how do I pick one? I'm going to have to go avocado.
Oh, okay, cool. Tell me why and what do you do with it?
Oh my God, why? I eat avocado on everything. I put avocados in my smoothie. They're an amazing source of fiber and potassium and great fats, and they balance our blood sugar and they make our skin glow and they taste amazing.
Sold. Sold. Cool. Okay. What is your most used kitchen tool?
My Vitamix.
Nice for those smoothies. What is like a go-to smoothie for? Do you have like a good morning? Like what's your mission with your smoothies? I feel like you probably have like strategic smoothies. Well, you say you warm up your ingredients.
Yeah.
What kind of?
So it's funny, like smoothies are my thing. I think they're amazing for gut healing. I think they're amazing for balancing insulin. And they're just like, if you're not doing gluten and dairy, and I don't do eggs either because it just messes my digestive system up, they're just a really great, easy kind of nutrition-based breakfast. So I have like gut healing smoothie recipe books and the whole thing, but honestly, I pretty much stick to the same formula. So I'm always going to do, I do a collagen-based protein, but you can do a plant-based protein as well. I do zucchini, spinach. I'll do avocado or nut butter. And then I'll do flaxseed and almond milk.
Yum. Sounds great.
And then I get creative and I'll like put some fermented maca powder in there or cacao powder. But pretty much I stick to the same recipe all of the time.
That's awesome. Do you have that on your website? We can link to in the show notes.
Yes. If you go to www.jenniferhanway.com, you can actually download my free gut healing recipe book from there.
Wow.
Yeah.
This was not a planned sponsored thing. Nice. Okay. What is your favorite super sleep habit?
I love all of that. How can you say that?
What do you think is the one? Okay, I'll rephrase. If somebody's listening and they're like, okay, I get it. everything affects everything. Got to get on the sleep. I really want to prioritize my sleep, yeah, but they're overwhelmed. What is one thing they could try tonight or tomorrow morning?
Do not let your phone go in your bedroom with you.
Oh, I'm like, ew. Even, okay, fine. I'm gonna be devil's advocate. Even if it's on airplane mode and night mode.
Yes, ma'am. There was a fascinating and scary study that was done in the UK, and it was on, I think it was like 7 or 8 year old boys, and they had their phones in their bedroom, but their phones were switched off, like the phones were off. Okay. And these kids were still getting a dopamine hit, and it was interrupting their sleep just because their phones were in the bedroom, because they're so used to getting that dopamine hit from their phones.
You should see, I just made every face in the book right now. Disgusted, shocked. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I guess step one then is, well, unfortunately, it sounds like one should get that daylight alarm light thing, because if they're afraid to not wake up.
Yeah. Or you can do, I mean, my husband and I, because obviously the daylight alarm clock, that can be challenging if you sleep in a room with someone else. Mm-hmm. So my husband and I have kind of what I would call, it's like $10, $11 from Amazon. And it's like those small little digital alarm clocks that your parents probably had. And we use those. Both of us wake up naturally, but we use those if we have to wake up. Because if our phone's in our room, it's just one, it's going to do things to our brain without us even knowing. And two, it's just too tempting. So A, our phones don't go in our room, and B, we turn our Wi-Fi off at night as well.
I'm doing that. I'm going to get a really cute old-fashioned alarm clock.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it. Now listen, my husband, there's no chance he won't not keep his phone in the room. Can he just keep his and I don't have mine and still I'll be better off?
Yes, absolutely.
Because I don't get dopamine hits from his phone. I don't care about his phone.
No, you don't care about his phone.
Okay, cool.
So as long as he can deal with it.
I'll have him listen. He can make his own decision, but I'll be, you know, destroyed if I'm like, okay, no phone in your room.
no phones in the room.
Too soon for a divorce. Okay. What is a book that has inspired you in some awesome way?
Oh my goodness. I read so much. What I'm reading at the moment is Digital Minimalism by Cal Newport. And it's all about our addiction to technology.
Shocker.
Right.
That's so funny.
It's all about our addiction to technology and how it affects our health and social relationships and et cetera, et cetera. So even though I preach all of this stuff and I teach all of this stuff, it's still really great to understand the science behind it and to take a look at my own habits as well.
Cool. That sounds like a great read, especially after this convo. Okay. Where can everybody go to stay connected to you? You have a new coaching program coming out all about everything we just talked about, right?
Yeah, so you can find me. So pretty much jenniferhanway.com is where you can find me online. Instagram is jenniferhanway.com. Instagram is Jennifer Hanway. That's where I'm most active. I have a 6-week online coaching program that takes all of the information that we've talked about and so much more. I mean, we've just touched on things that we can do and then really personalize it for your life. So whether you have kids, whether you have a crazy job, whether you travel a ton, we can personalize all of those suggestions to your life and make it easy to implement and so it doesn't feel overwhelming.
I think I want to join. When does it start? Is it always rolling or is there a start date?
Always rolling. So because you can start at any time.
Oh, cool. Okay. And you're offering our peeps 20% off, right?
You guys get 20% off with the code PARTYINMYPLANTS.
Awesome. That's cool.
Yeah.
I think this is important stuff. This is great. Oh, thank you so incredibly much for sharing all that today. I hope you sleep beautifully.
I you know what? I do.
Oh, fine. Thanks so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. So I guess my phone is no longer going to sleep in my room with me. Jesse can stay, I guess. Honestly, taking that chronotype test, which I've linked for you in the show notes at partyinmyplants.com/138, has been such a game changer for our marital bliss. Understanding that my baby, he was born that way, has helped me slow my eye rolls when he wakes up after I've been up and running for what feels like a century. If you know someone else who sleeps, please share this with them. Everyone sleeps. Share it with everyone. And for a recap of this chat, links to things we spoke about, like the face bra, more deets on Thrive to help you thrive, and more goodies that make being healthy way less sucky, head to partyinmyplants.com/138.